Hello and welcome to Glitch Cube, our gaming podcast, and each week we take a deeper look into the art of video games. As always, I'm Christian.
I'm Chris.
And welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us once again as we dive further into the world of games. So, this week we are going to be diving into a hot-button topic that we have been talking about for quite a while now, one that has kind of bugged us a little bit, I would say, and something that I think, or at least we both think, that can be done better or just looked at in a different way. And that is reviews. Reviews themselves of games, movies, media in general have all been taken down to the numerical value alone. People just look at a number and base their entire decision on that solely. But that doesn't really tell you about what the game actually is, what the designer's intent might be, how the gameplay feels, because everybody is different. There's so many times in which I've seen a review for a game or a movie, and it's horrible. It's bad reviews. Like, I'm talking 3% of Rotten Tomatoes for some movies. And I watch the movie, and I enjoy it, right? It could be a fun time. But it isn't going to be critically acclaimed. It's not going to be winning any awards, but it's still enjoyable. And it's unfortunate because a lot of those titles will end up getting passed by. And they won't be making the money. The actors or game makers or designers won't be, you know, getting the, I guess, recognition that they deserve because it's not a quote-unquote blockbuster hit or a huge grandiose game or whatever it may be. It's not award-winning in that sense. It's just a fun time. So we've kind of bounced around with some different ideas on how to properly rate a game. And it is very difficult to do so. There is no right or wrong way, but we do feel like we might have something that could at least help out a little bit. And granted, it will take some investment from the consumer to fully indulge in the quote-unquote review of itself. So today, we're going to be talking about just reviews in general, specifically, probably a lot on Metacritic as well, maybe the history of where reviews have come from, how they've expanded or evolved over the years, and with how the internet has changed, how YouTube has taken over, and with gaming reviews, and what gets the most views is the person that screams the loudest, but does that validate their thoughts on these games? And should these people be the spokespersons for those titles? Let's find out. We're going to chat about that. So initially, when it comes to reviews, because we all look at them regardless of the fact, but like, how do you take your reviews? Do you take them for face value and base the decision solely on that? Or are you more of a, like, you take it into consideration, but you do your own kind of research on the side?
I take into consideration. I think I've always kind of been like that. I feel like there was a point, especially during that like 360 era, where I was more like really into like, oh, this got bad numbers, like maybe I'll skip it. But I mean, like, back then it was still like, you know, your typical AAA games coming out. So it was like, if something didn't look interesting, it's like, eh, oh well, on to the next, right? But like, nowadays, with so many options, it's kind of like, for me, if I went by the pure numbers, I would be missing out on so many games. You know, like, I like seeing the high scores and then the lowest scores. Maybe not the lowest, because I feel like the lowest scores are just people, like, saying the dumbest things. Especially when it's user reviews. I think for the sake of this episode, maybe not looking at user reviews, unless it's like Steam, because that's a different kind of monster in itself. But when you look at like user reviews on like Metacritic, it's just like, you know, they've, I think, gotten better with people doing review bombs, but I've just learned never to really trust user reviews too much unless it's like seems detailed. But I usually and this goes for any kind of media, hell, even the news, where I'm like, I want to get all different sides on this subject. I want to see just different people's viewpoints, right? Like, I want to know why someone really likes this game and why someone hates it. And I want to see it from different perspectives, right? Like, if someone is an RPG guy and he has to play an action platformer, I want to see his thoughts on it, definitely, because it's not his cup of tea. So it's like, is this a game that's going to appeal to him? Or is it going to, you know, like, what's wrong with it, right? Like, how will this game suck in somebody that wouldn't normally play those games? Mm-hmm. But I can also see why someone would be like, well, you want the person that likes those games, because then they're going to give like a detailed synopsis on like what's good and what's wrong. But I don't know, like, that's why I like seeing it all from different viewpoints, because it is interesting. You know, everyone has something interesting to say about a game unless they're just parroting other people's thoughts. What about you?
Yeah, I'm more, I like to look at the reviews, I guess, and just take a quick glance at them, but I actually completely ignore them mm-hmm. for the most part. There's a couple videos that I will watch potentially, but most of the time I'm looking for gameplay. I want to see gameplay footage yep. and make my own educated guess as to if this game actually is for me. But probably the one site that I will go to, or one YouTuber that I'll actually watch reviews on, is Before You Buy. I like his content, actually. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's solid. It's most of the time, I mean, the earlier stuff felt a little bit more unbiased, and now he's getting a little bit more kind of typical, I guess, because he needs views, he needs to make a living, and he can't get too mad at that. But for the most part, he's very analytical as to how he approaches these, which I do appreciate, and that does help out a lot. But most of the time, I actually really enjoy looking up interviews of the designers themselves, gameplay footage of the game, and just reading up on what the plot is from the point of view of the people who made the game. If they can make a very compelling, like a two-paragraph synopsis of what this game is about, I am more than willing to give it a chance. What, like, versus reading something from Metacritic or just some random screaming gamer that says this game is amazing, you should go buy it, I'm usually on the fence. It's like, okay, well, let me see for myself. Because, I mean, with the way that the gaming market has evolved, there's a lot of games out there that are very, very popular, but I don't like personally. It's not my kind of game. So that's why when it comes to these reviews, I tend to really ignore them mostly. I find it fascinating to see when a game gets reviewed negatively or positively, and then trying to look in and see why. And most of the time, it feels like these reviewers are just trying to boost their own ego to, you know, pad out their writing resume and see, show off how creative they can be or how colorful they can be with their writing. And it's unfortunate because it's not an honest review at that point. They're just being angry to be angry, and or just trying to get a rise out of people. And I do find that very unfortunate whenever looking at these things. But, you know, the big thing is that that's not new. And while I find it very fascinating, at least, that with the way that YouTube game reviews and game videos in general have changed, it's actually following the same, like, I guess, blueprint that has been laid out from written media. Like, they started out pretty honest with things like, what was that first magazine? Playmeter, right? When it was reviewing things like arcade machines and pinball machines and things like that. And they were fairly honest reviews. And then as the media continued to grow, it got like angrier and more colorful and things like that. And the same thing seems to have happened with YouTube in video reviews, where it was a little bit more timid, But now it is very much how much can we bash the game and talk shit about it rather than talk about the positives of this title. Like, why can't we just talk about what went well versus what went wrong, right? Like, those kind of things. And try and find out the actual niche market for this. I feel like too often game reviewers are being tasked to play these games whenever it's not their cup of tea. So,
oh, yeah.
Of course they're going to get bad numbers. You know, like, it's kind of sad. Yeah.
You know, it's like a lot of them, especially the way the industry is right now, where so many journalists are losing their jobs. And like, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because we are in that age where, you know, most people are going to go to YouTube for it. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't really go to game websites anymore for reviews. Like for a minute there, like I'll go to like VGC for like game news sometimes for like major stuff. But other than that, like, I don't go to a website anymore for reviews. Like, there's usually certain people that I'm like, oh, this person has a video on this topic. Why don't I watch it? You know, like, it's rare for me to go and, like, pick out a page and be like, I like this review. Because, yeah, it's half the time it's people that, you know, out of their control, like they don't have time to fully play a game, or if they do, it's usually like the big game, right? Like your Elden Ring, your Dragon's Dogma. Like, people will fully devote and beat those games, but a lot of times you get, when they get a smaller game, they'll play a little bit of it and then they'll just form an idea without like finishing it, which makes sense, right? Say, like, you know, you have to get this review done in 2 days. And your only free time, even though it's your job, but you're probably juggling 4 game reviews, it makes sense that people would kind of rush. But I think the bigger problem is, because the industry is kind of shrinking, we're going to, from a big professional side, right? Like your IGNs, your big game sites, basically, there's going to be less variety. Unless, like, you have reviewers that have a broader taste. The thing is, like, there's a lot of reviewers out there that hit certain genres, certain, like, niches where they have an expertise, but because they're not these big websites, they just get pushed down to the bottom, or just not enough people know them. And I think that's the issue, too, is that we are going towards that point where it's just video reviews. But the thing is, it's like, you only see your big companies because they have the eyes on them. You don't see some of these smaller reviews doing small indie games, right? Like, we barely even see the ones on Steam half the time. I mean, I do, just because my algorithm skews towards it. But it's like, it's very rare that I see people doing reviews on like Itch.io games or, God forbid, an RPG Maker game. Like, it's so rare to see your non-standard games, which is a bummer. Because when you look at those like smaller communities, there's games coming out all the time. But let alone, there's barely anyone like you or me talking about them. A chance one of these like big critics or reviewers sees it, like, no, they already have all their time devoted to, you know, the next Elden Ring, something like that. Like, it's,
well, and they have contracts too much on with these people. Bigger companies as well, and they don't want to lose those contracts, so they're gonna put the bigger titles up front because they're getting free game keys and they want to continue to do that to, you know, keep their business afloat. So, I mean, it makes sense on that, for them to do that thing. But yeah, it is kind of unfortunate whenever you see these games on stuff like Itch.io, like you mentioned, get passed by, because some of the best games of our time so far have started out on Itch.io. And it was because of that player fan base that allowed them to continue to grow. Like, the first version of it's been like, it's Itch.io and it's Game Jams and things like that that are really bringing forth new innovative ideas and fascinating concepts, like games like Celeste, right? Like, that game is amazing. And it ended up getting critical acclaim, but it started out as a little title. And if it wasn't because of the player fan base ranting and raving about it, we would have never heard of this game. And I feel like that's kind of where things are going now, because, like you said, the industry is shrinking. It is getting much smaller. The amount of studios that are out there are dwindling because the funds just aren't there, which is unfortunate. And it's tough, you know, whenever people are getting free game keys for these AAA games, they have to review those. And I think, and whenever they speed through other games, like, for instance, the new game coming out that I've been looking at a lot, Saviorless, none of the reviews touch on the cultural significance of this title. And I think that's very, very important to play into the whole game itself. Sure, like, maybe the game isn't that great. I don't know yet. It's not coming out yet. But it already has it's a leaning towards a negative review, which is unfortunate, because this game is paving the way for new game industry, like a whole new subset from a different culture and like breaking into the gaming market. So it's sad to see that, but that's not what people are paying attention to or what people care about, which sucks. I hate that.
The thing too is something, at least, especially with like Metacritic, because it does pull, you know, from a lot of things. It's like a lot of these, like, I haven't had a chance to look really into, like, how do you become a critic, right? So it's like, instead of being a user, like, is it just owning a website? Like, what? Because it's like, I'll see so many like random names that I'm like, what the hell is this website? Like, who are they to drop such like a high, like 100 on something and then like drop like a 50 on another? And it's just like, shouldn't that just be a user review? Like, where we were like, oh, we're considered critics. Like, we should have a critic page on Metacritic. Like, it's weird. You know, I think that's why for me, I look at Metacritic and I'm like, I can't fully take it seriously, because yeah, at the top of the page, you're going to see your typical major websites. But as you start going down the critic list, it's like, who are half these websites? You know, obviously they must have some kind of fan base, just because like maybe they're relevant, but I'm like, damn, I haven't heard any of these people. And I'm usually all into this kind of stuff, looking at stuff. But yeah, it's weird. You know, like coming back to like what you said about Saviorless, it's like, it's sad because like there's a lot of games out there that have like a cultural impact behind them. And I get like that, like I could see why someone would say like that shouldn't influence a score, right? Because most people just want the actual game. But I think people should still bring it out, right? Like, to me, in a lot of ways,
it's kind of like conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, it should at least be brought up, you know. And I think for me, another thing that I notice with reviews is that when it comes to like stability or performance, right? And I think this seems like a touchy subject for quite a lot of people when it comes to reviews, because like I've had mixed opinions on how stability should be in a review. Because it's hard, right? Especially if you're going to talk about a PC-centered game, because everyone's computer is different for the most part. Because it's like, I'll see negative reviews on Steam for a game that runs perfectly fine for me and like a couple thousand other people. And then you're going to get like a couple hundred people saying like, this game's super unstable, don't play it. And it's like, yeah, well, you have probably a potato for a computer. Like, it... It's not the game's fault if it's running.
And they're writing very emotionally and writing very negatively about the designers, when that's not, like, you're not even getting the experience of the game. You can't blame the designers. Like, I'm not going to write a bad review because I can't play a game on my Mac, right? Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah. And it's, that's, I think, also the problem with Steam reviews is, like, like, I like them in a lot of ways. Like, I've almost come to usually read the detailed ones of those, because some people are pretty thorough on their reviews, surprisingly. But then you get a lot of those people that are just like, you know, thumbs down because it's funny, or exactly what you just said. It's like, oh, I don't like the design of this game. You should probably play this game instead because it's cooler. And it's just like, I don't know. It's kind of weird.
When you recommend another game in your review, I immediately disregard that review. It's like, well, that's not even what we're talking about. Like, why are you bringing this up? Like, unless you're making a fair comparison between the two, like when it comes to, let's say, similar game mechanics and how they worked out, and if it's a recent release or same studio or something like that, then sure, you can bring it up. But if you're saying like, oh, don't waste your time on this game, go play this game, it's like, well, why? And if it's a completely different title, it's like, that makes no sense. So, but a lot of people do that, and it's very emotional, which is kind of ridiculous. I actually have a review from something that you might recognize too, but this is from back in the day. This is Game Zero Magazine. I don't know if you remember that one. They have...
I think they have like a cool logo, didn't they?
Yeah, it's very classic. All their stuff is archived now, so like you can go look it up, which is kind of cool. It was very, very like early internet days, but they're not really doing reviews anymore. They get very emotional with their reviews, but it kind of at least lays a framework as to like bad reviewing, but this was a popular site and very well established at the time. And people went for this, like went to this person for their gaming reviews. And it's kind of sad because of how like obviously biased these reviews are and how that is trickled into how reviews are done now to this day still. Like, for instance, I kind of want to read this one because I thought it was kind of funny, but it was a review on Banjo-Kazooie. Okay. And what I found really interesting about this was that I think Banjo-Kazooie came out, what, like 98? This review was written in 2002. So it took him 4 years to play Banjo-Kazooie before he reviewed it. And oh boy, this guy really tears into it. Remember how I brought up don't bring up other games in your review if it has nothing to do with it? Well, he does it in this one too. So while on the surface this would appear to be a kid's game, I can't really recommend this game for children. Much of the atmosphere of the game is really heavy and gloomy as you progress farther in the game. True, okay. It's still kiddie regardless of the fact though. This game also gets a strike against it on two counts. The extraordinary ramp up of difficulty in later stages that makes them not very fun to try and solve, and the ending where you think you finished the game but instead find out you have to open one last door that you can't open unless you back out and solve every last damn puzzle in the game. Ah! And this is a text review, and he did actually type in a scream there. No, thank you. Not going to do it. That stupid puzzle at the end of the game just to get to the witch was enough for me. I'm sick of the game, and now I will go back and try and finish and I will not go back and try and finish the last parts of any stages areas I didn't finish. Sure, the game is visually engaging with interesting level design, artwork, and colorful NPCs, in quotations, non-playable characters for people who don't know what NPC is, if you're reading a gaming review. Play control was decent, but took a little bit of time to master. Sound was appropriate, but nothing amazing or memorable to speak of. Okay, it's Banjo-Kazooie. Nothing memorable or amazing? Okay, sure. I did like this game, and I would recommend it for most adults or teenagers looking for a decent 3D platformer. I did not like the ending, but that's Rare. That's what Rare does. I guess I'm doomed to never see the complete end of a sequence of a Rare title. Oh well, this game works out okay as a rental. As a cheap used purchase, I don't think I would pay new price for it though. In fact, if you are price or time limited, but really want to spend your time on a Rare game, check out Jet Force Gemini instead. Yeah. Does anybody even remember what Jet Force Gemini was? I don't know if they actually do. So But yeah, needless to say, he gave this game a very bad score, and it's Banjo-Kazooie. But it's very emotionally driven. You can tell that this is just not his type of game. He is not into the collectionist concept, and it's a Rare game. You know, like, they follow the same formula. But it's, I think it's funny that he brings up Jet Force Gemini, and his review on Jet Force Gemini is, it's nothing but praise. And what's funny about his review of Jet Force Gemini is that he brings back the idea of Banjo-Kazooie and continues to bash on it in his positive review of Jet Force Gemini. So, yeah. It's reviews are, it's tough to actually find a good review on a product. And this is just a shining example of someone that published it and put it out there and got recognition for their reviews, skewing bias for some people. Some people might have passed up Banjo-Kazooie because of this. And Banjo-Kazooie is a well-loved game. It's a well-loved title. So it's interesting to see, but people just have to remember, anybody can make a website. Anybody can make a blog. It does not mean that they are, I guess, what's the right word? Like, that they should be review writers. It doesn't mean that their word carries more weight than anyone else. It just means that they took the time to make this blog. And you're getting their biases. So you seem to be able to read through the lines, read in between them, actually, and see and make your own decision based off this stuff. So, like, it's reviews like this that make it that I don't, this is why I don't pay attention to these reviews, because of stuff like that. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous. But I just thought that was a really interesting review there, and I wanted to share that with you guys.
Yeah, it's, when you, especially when you look at, like, the early 2000s, mid-2000s, when it was kind of, like, the cool thing to kind of, like, I don't know, be aggravated about a game. Mm-hmm. You know, around that time.
Games were edgy back then. All that. Yeah.
And it's like, I get it. Like, for me, I grew up reading Sean Baby's reviews in EGM, and he would usually always end up playing, like, the really shitty games, right? Like, Bible Adventures or, you know, like, I don't say Bubsy. I mean, Bubsy's bad, but it's not like, well, I guess Bubsy 3D is kind of bad. But he would play, like, a lot of these other, like, really bad games, like Custer's Revenge, and it'd be funny. Like, he would make it into a joke, and that's kind of what he was big for. And I feel like some people tried to mimic that, but the problem is, it's like he got big for doing that. Yeah. You can't, it's like, say if you started acting like Angry Joe or something like that and just started doing angry reviews, like, it's not the same, you know? So it's like, there was that whole edgy take on reviews, and people still do it. You know, it's just not in the super professional sense. Like, people usually do that on their, like, you know, their YouTube channels and stuff. But it, yeah, it's kind of a bummer. Like, I do like kind of how the old reviews were in the 90s, where you would have four people play a game for the most part, right? Like, I've been doing some research on some video stuff, and it's like, I've been reading, like, old issues of, like, Game Fan, Game Pro, EGM, all this stuff. And a majority of the games, like, there's more than one person doing a review for some of these games. And it's interesting because sometimes their scores vary so much just because it's like, you know, say you're rating, I don't know, Gran Turismo, right? So you have your two racer guys. And then you have, like, someone who doesn't play racing games and one person that might like it passively. And it's cool because it's like, you see it from different perspectives. You see it maybe in a different way. And, you know, I've tried looking at, like, when they would rate a game really low. And it's not like they would outright say the game was, like, a pile of crap. But they would be like, maybe skip this, or maybe rent it. And it's like, that's at least cool, you know, that they said that. I feel like nowadays, too many people are afraid to say, like, bad things about a game. It's weird because it's, like, both ways, right? You have people that'll just say bad things about a game, but then you have a lot of people that it's like, this was an okay game. This was a good game. And it's just like, well, okay, what made it not a great game? And I feel like there's some people that I used to watch that kind of went down that hole of like, they talk about, say, a platformer, and they'd be like, this is a really fun game. And it's like, you know, you can do this stuff with it. And it's like, they wouldn't go into the details of why it wasn't as great as they expected. And they just kind of made it sound like, yeah, it's worth a look. And it's like, you know that they probably got that game for free or sponsored. And it's like, that's the other issue, is that a lot of these people, they want to do this so they can, you know, play games for free or possibly get paid and sponsored. And it's like, you don't want to just be like, hey, this game ain't great, right? Because then you're just not going to get free stuff anymore, which I get. But at the same time, it also leads into this perspective of like saying every game is good. And then you're going to get these people that are like, wow, this game is actually really bad. And then you're going to get like 100 people just like reacting to it. I don't know. I feel like the review space is in a really weird state the past few years, especially just because like the internet, I feel like, has become way more vocal than it ever has.
Mm-hmm.
And in a much more negative tone, definitely. Like, there's certain communities that have been very positive and it's been well, but majority of that I've seen, it's usually pretty negative. And for the most part, that's why I kind of just go back to certain communities, certain genres, because it's like, I don't know. I feel like you get a lot of that weird stuff when it comes to bigger games, just because there's more eyes on it.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like reviews are in a weird state. And it's also just like, you know, think about it. There's not that many game magazines in existence anymore. So it's like everything is online, and it is weird when it's like a game gets, or a review gets updated. And I don't know. It's just kind of odd. It's weird.
Yeah. The whole process is kind of broken in general. But just real quick, because we are getting a little bit close to time here for us. But I'm curious, like, what, when it comes to a review, or when it, like, what, how do we fix it, right? And I'm very curious to hear, like, I mean, obviously we agree that numbers are not the way to do this. Numbers don't mean anything. Like, getting a score of 0 to 100 or 1 to 10, you know, like, it doesn't hold weight, and it's just not a good way of doing these things, because you're putting quantitative, like, it just, I don't know. There's something very wrong with that concept itself in general. I look at it more of a, maybe like an essay format, or a few paragraphs, or a paragraph on each sort of topic, right? And I always want to know the designer's intent as the first, like, overarching concept there, right? And when I'm talking about designer intent, it's just, did the game accomplish what the designer intended to do? Is the story actually, or the idea of the game, fully fleshed out and clear for the player themselves? That's one of the biggest things for me, because looking at it from a designer standpoint, and that is very important to me. I want to know that my message has come across. So I feel like that would be a really great concept, or a thing to quote unquote grade something on, but at least to bring up in conversation. So I'm just curious of, like, maybe what is an important concept to you that you want in a maybe new style review of what it may be? If there was no numbers, what would you want to read about or hear about when it comes to making a decision?
It's weird, because in the end, I really do like Steam's way of doing it, where it's like positive, very positive, overwhelming, just based on like the amount of reviews for the most part, because it takes away the number, but it still tells you, like, does a majority of the people like this? Like, usually if something gets spammed on Steam, like, they're decently adequate at their job of removing those review bombs. But for me, the other thing too is I like the tag system in it. And I know people add dumbass tags to some of the games on Steam. But I do like when, you know, I'm looking at it and it's telling me everything I can kind of expect in the game. Oh, this has town building. Oh, this has this in it. And then I can look for those maybe in a review on the page and see what someone says about it. Because for me, I think that's something that a lot of times when a game comes out, unless like it's obvious that that's what the game is, if there's a lot of hidden systems in it, you know, reviewers might overlook that because they're focusing on the main gameplay and not looking at like maybe some of these side systems. Whereas it'd be cool to know what I might be getting into. I do think the numbering system, we're at a point now where like it's a good idea, but we're at a point where there's the industry is too big, right? There's not enough people out there to actually give accurate numbers without just everything being flooded with tens or ones. So, you know, you look at movies, you look at everything else, there's enough people out there reviewing that stuff where you kind of get the more accurate stuff, except for Rotten Tomatoes. It's just always backwards.
Yeah.
But,
seeing a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes, I automatically rent it. So,
yeah, it's like with games, it used to be where if a game got a 6 or a 7, I usually would play it or I'd add it to like my list, because usually those games were like decent or fun. You know, like some people just don't like certain things, but when you look at it, it's like, oh, that's perfect for me. So in a way, the number system does kind of work out in my favor, because I like looking at those like right in the middle scores. But I think if they wanted to really change it and fix it, I guess maybe just the pro and cons list of like things they really liked about and things they didn't. And it sucks because I wish that we could still rent games, because it'd be cool if it could be like buy, rent, or avoid, right? Like,
yeah,
something like that. But yeah, it's weird. There's no way to really make it where you can be super critical on it without putting really a number. Because I feel like if you did away with numbers, how are how would you get critical with it?
Quantitative, yeah.
But it could be where there's like a, I don't know, like a meter or something, right? Like, just be like, I would recommend this. Oh, I wouldn't recommend it. Maybe just something simple like that. And then that way you can move on to the next person and see, do they recommend it or not? And I know I'm going back to Steam again with this, but it's like, it just makes sense, right? Like, I want to see what someone liked, what someone didn't, right there on the same page. Whereas like Metacritic, it's like, I have to scroll down and down and down.
Well, what's nice what about the Steam like. With the positive things is that is... usually those are fans of those styles of games that are leaving those kind of reviews. So if you know that this is your kind of game and you're seeing people who are leaving overwhelming positive reviews on this, then you're probably going to enjoy your time with it. And you're able to kind of pinpoint and drill down to genres that you specifically enjoy, which is nice. And then they have like the curated stuff so people can curate games and things like that. So like Steam
I think
is actually doing
it.
Really good. Yeah.
I think it's I think that's kind of what I've gotten into now, is where, like, if I look for someone whose opinion I like, and then I look at their curated list, and that's when I'm like, okay, I'm going to check this out. And I don't want to say that is the future of reviews in a way, because it's like, then you start getting into, like, away from everything. But I really do like that curator list, where it's just like, here's some good stuff to check out by someone I really like. Like, it's just, it's nice, because they just kind of, like you said, go over the stuff that you would want to look for in those certain genres.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, that the way Steam does it, I guess, like, looking further, I'd never really thought about it before this episode more, but, like, their review system actually does work because it's fan-base led. It's not crazy critics. It's not, you know, these, like, giants in the industries. It's not these magazines, these blogs who are getting free games and things like that. This is people voting with their own money. And that is the most real and raw version of a review. If people are buying it, they enjoy it. And if people enjoy that kind of game, you can find little subset communities of that and find more games within those genres that you actually enjoy. So, yeah, I guess Steam actually does have a pretty damn good review system going. Never really thought about that.
And I like that they label if the person got it for free. And I like that you can also see the person's playtime. Because I feel like that's the other thing, too. Because it's like, if someone says 20-minute playtime
and they hate the game, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, why do you hate it, right? Or it's like, they have 60 hours in it, and then it's a negative review. I'm like, well, I'm much more likely to read that, because I'm like, well, why did you spend so much time and ultimately not like it? Like, it's just like...
And if you spent... it was worthy of 60 hours, like, that says a lot on its own. Playing 60 hours is something you don't enjoy, that's... interesting. Like, that's a whole nother, like, mental thing that I would like to drill into.
It could
into.
Be like, you like most of the game and then it ends bad, you know? So it's like, but that's what I like, right? You don't see the playtime in other reviews,
or if they even,
because you would just expect the reviewer would beat a game,
right?
But a lot of them don't. So that's kind of the thing I like, or at least, like, you don't know how long they actually played of the game. So,
yeah, that's a very good point. Well, all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week. Hope you guys have enjoyed this little conversation here into gaming reviews. And what do you guys think about it? Are you still okay with the number system? Does that work for you? Or do you want to see it evolve into something different? How do you like Steam reviews? Let us know. But anyway, we'll talk to you guys next week with some more games and all that good stuff in between. But until then, bye for now.